The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, a Republican who represents all of Ontario and parts of Seneca County. Leader Kolb is the important part about this. He's the leader of the endangered species known as Republicans in the Assembly. Good to have you back, Mr. Leader. You're not insulted by the fact that I say you're an endangered species, are you?
No, I got pretty thick skin. You have to go a long way to insult me, Alan.
So let's talk a little bit about some topics. There's something called the Gold Star Family Bill, which is a bill that you are really passionate about, which would have provided free college to the children of all veterans killed in the line of duty, and it was blocked in the Assembly. Have they told you why they blocked it by the Democrats?
Well, basically, they tried to come up with this mealy excuse about it's because it has a financial impact, that it should be done as part of the budget negotiations. In the type of money we're talking about here, Alan, is probably less than $3 million,
wow,
even that much. And trust me, there's plenty of money that can be appropriated. It's been done plenty of other times. It's really just because it was a Republican bill that Deborah Glick and the Assembly Democrats on the Higher Education Committee voted to hold the bill, so the bill couldn't go out to the floor for a vote. So everything they've been saying is just political spin. The fact remains they held the bill. The bill should be done. You know, we've heard from veterans' families all across, and quite frankly, outside of New York State. The President of the United States tweeted about it. It's unconscionable that they would use military families and the pain that they go through and treat people that are undocumented immigrants get tuition assistance, but not the families of fallen military personnel.
You know, Brian Kolb, I have to say I agree with you on this. You know, the idea that somebody gives their life and we could do a little something, which is to send their kids to college. And when you read everything you're reading about some of the very wealthy people in this country who have been bribing their kids into college, it all sort of adds up to this is a no-brainer to me.
It is a no-brainer, and unfortunately, Deborah Glick, the assemblywoman who chairs the committee, was so dismissive in her remarks. It was really unconscionable, you know. And I mean, we all get politics and all of that sort of thing, but when you're talking about what I believe is truly a nonpartisan issue, and then we should find ways to get things done. Rather than just say no. But unfortunately, this is the attitude that Deborah Glick and the people on that committee decided to vote that way.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I've always been a big admirer of Deborah Glick. But I think what happens here, you're quite right, is it just is as soon as the other guys propose it or are for it, we have to be against it. That's the kind of illness that has infiltrated the American political system, isn't it?
It is, and that's what makes people get fed up with government, with people that are involved in government and serving. You know, it's become so politicized. It's bad enough in New York. It's worse in Washington. And quite frankly, you know, one thing that I've always advocated for is look at up and down votes on legislation. If you don't have enough votes on the merit, fine. But let's have an airing. And there's a lot of good legislation, Alan, quite frankly, that is introduced by Republicans that don't see the light of day just because it was introduced by a Republican. And that's what's wrong with New York State government. You know, I've said all along, if you really want to start changing the dynamics and have more involvement by the rank and file legislators, both parties, by the way, not just Republican, then we got to change the way the place operates. And that comes from the top. in both houses, quite frankly, the Senate and the Assembly, not just this year, but prior years. When the Republicans were in power in the Senate, they held Democrat bills that didn't get a fair hearing either. So it's a illness that has plagued state government that, quite frankly, turns a lot of people off. And, you know, that's one thing I'd love to see change before I am no longer serving in the legislature, is we change that political dynamic.
Well, to be fair, in the Senate, when the Republicans held the Senate, they certainly weren't allowing good, worthy Democratic bills to come up, right?
Great. That's what I just said that.
Yeah, you did. I just want to make it clear. Now, the question to you would be, poof, if by magic you got to be the leader, would your tune change?
I mean, you wouldn't know until it happens, but,
and,
you know,
and
I
it's
think
not
going
to happen because there's so many Democrats in the Assembly now.
Right, but I would tell you, if I became Speaker of the House, the place would be turned on its ear because we would do things totally different than what the Assembly Democrats have done for years, ever since they've been in power. I would do different things differently than what the Senate Republicans did when they were handling legislation the same way. It would be a what I would call a much more transparent and open government process. There'd be a heck of a lot more public hearings about, you know, key pieces of legislation, whether it's, you know, health care, whether it's, you know, the crime bill that got jammed in the budget. We'd be doing a lot more things in the open and have the public much more engaged with weighing in on some of these controversial pieces of legislation.
But that's what they always say. I mean, I don't want to give you a hard time. You're a good guy. I know that, and I very much respect you. But that's what they always say. When we get into control, it'll be different. There'll be transparency. But then, you know, the cynicism in the American people, of course, is that it never happens that way.
Well, of course, and that's the problem.
And I mean both parties. Yeah.
I agree.
There's Mitch McConnell sitting up there at the head of your party up there in the Senate, and you know there are pieces of legislation that the Republicans would have to vote for, so that he doesn't even allow it to come to the floor, not for a single vote.
Well, and that's I don't agree with that process either. You know, that's what, you know, somebody like myself that. I'm doing this for public service, and I really enjoy the work, but it does get frustrating. I come from a business background. You could never run an enterprise the way governments are run in terms of the polarizing politics and divisive nature, the name calling back and forth. I just think that's why you have more people not voting. It's not about ease of voting. It's about that they're fed up. They're not interested. Nothing's going to change in their minds. They look at Republicans and Democrats the same that are in politics. And that's why Americans have lost faith in this, in their political system, because they just don't see it working.
Well, to some degree, Brian Kolb, you're right. On the other hand, I have to disagree with you. If you make voting easier, if you do it, you know, on a Sunday, or if you do it with a state holiday for voting, or if you do it with early voting, you'll get more people voting, no question about it. And you Republicans, to be fair about this, almost always object to that kind of thing.
No, I don't object to early voting. I object to early voting that's jaded to help one political party over another. And in terms of if we had absolutely where everybody that could vote, it must show up with a legitimate identification that proves that they're the voter in that book. And if we're doing it 7 days earlier, I'm open to a lot of things as long as it doesn't favor one party or another, or the fact that we've got, quite frankly, a flawed system and who gets the vote and sometimes where they're voting and where they're living. And
okay, so make a little news. Make a little news for us here. Are you telling us, because the Democrats in both houses did pass, and it's going to certainly is signed, with voting reforms? I think you'd have to be kind of not right to not understand that you were just criticizing this bill, weren't you?
Well, it's not about being right. It's about my personal opinion about how our entire voting system is. It's not just having early voting. It's not going to solve all the ills of our electoral system. But what it also comes down to is, you know, people live in New York City. They have a place up in the Hudson Valley, and they vote in the Hudson Valley, even though the residence is in New York City. And this is what I call voter fraud and tilts the scales. And certainly when you're in a Democratic state, a small D Democrat state that we have, and there's such a numerical advantage in voters, you have to make sure, in fairness to everybody, that there's accountability in the voting process. And that's where I believe a lot more attention has to be paid to, not so much whether you're voting a week early or 10 days early from that perspective.
Now, remember when I was talking about when the Democrats didn't control the state Senate, but they did control the assembly. You know, there's a question of a lot of bills that never were allowed to see the light of day. They never got a vote. You say everything should get a vote. I'm for that. But I want to go through some of the ones that passed with you. So, for example, let's take the Child Victims Act, which allows a longer look back. Do you think that bill was flawed?
No, the bill we finally passed? No, I supported that bill. I voted for that bill.
Did you get people who didn't like it? I mean, the church clearly didn't like it because it might have meant some adverse financial issues, among others. But it didn't seem to be too many people objecting to that one, right?
Well, what happened over time was that they eventually made the Child Victim Act applicable to every setting, not just the church.
Sure.
And that's
as well.
And that was really the what I'll call got the ball over the goal line, was it made applicable to all sorts of institutions and not just the church. And that's why it passed so much easier accordingly. And sometimes, you could get an up and down vote on a bill, but a bill still can be flawed or could be made better. And that's what the process is all about. And I think that's why it finally passed at both houses.
Now, Leader Kolb, how about the Reproductive Health Act? This is the big kahuna of difficult votes for many legislators, particularly the Republicans, who would never have allowed it in the Senate, I believe. Now the Democrats take control of the Senate. You get it. What are you hearing? What about the process for that?
Well, I'm going to tell you what I'm hearing, and I voted against it, and
yeah, sure.
To allow abortion up to the date, including the day the child is born, is totally unacceptable. And I hear back in my district, and quite frankly, across the state, Democrats, pro-choice Democrat women who say that they've taken it too far. And I think that this issue is going to come back in certain parts of the state and haunt the Democrats on this vote. People look at this as going way too far in terms of allowing abortion up to the time and including the day a baby's born. And that is just ridiculous. And people are upset about it. And, you know, these are the things. And once a bill's passed and done, you know, it's like you can't turn the clock back unless you do, you know, amend the legislation or go back and change it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you that Democrat women in my district and different parts of the state were appalled by this bill being done by the Democrats and this way they celebrated it. And lighting up buildings under Andrew Cuomo's direction is unconscionable. And this piece of it is not about pro-choice or pro-life. It really is about allowing the termination of a baby in the womb up until the day and including the day the baby's born. And that is just a step too far. And so, that is Roe v. Wade never included that process and how they sold this. Oh, we're just codifying Roe v. Wade. It's an absolute lie, absolute falsehood, and that's why people are not happy about it.
We're on different sides of the platform on this one, but I have to tell you, there is a substantial group of people who just don't like my position, which is, you know, we have to allow abortion and the women, not a bunch of older guys, should be making these decisions about their health. But I hear you.
This is not about man versus woman or man telling women what to do. We're talking about life here. You know, when I say to any number of people, so you're telling me you're 8 months pregnant and a doctor can come up with the wildest imagination and they'll allow a woman to terminate her child's life at the 8th month or 9 months. And that's just unconscionable.
What if it's about the life of the mother? Brian, what about if it's the life of the mother? What if it's about
the life of the mother? If it was the life of the mother, then that is one finite one thing. If that is truly
not so finite,
case, but the
wait, I don't want to argue with you, Brian. But you said that these doctors can come up with some crazy ideas about why this should be done, and that's not so finite. It happens all the time. You know, a birth is going to occur, and the doctor says no, this would kill the mother. Why shouldn't that be? Why shouldn't that be a consideration?
I didn't say it shouldn't be. I said it, that's a very specific. A woman's life is in danger. Absolutely, they have to weigh that option. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about allowing many other reasons besides the life of the mother at risk as to the ability to abort the pregnancy. And that's the broad stroke brush that's been allowed to happen with this legislation.
So what's the gun control red flag bill?
Well, the gun control red flag bill, you know, is about, you know, the ability for people to alert someone they believe may be a danger to themselves or danger to the public that has firearms. You know, certainly when people are always concerned about mental illnesses and people, firearms or weapons of any form or fashion falling into the wrong hands. And it's really just a matter of about who has that ability. What's involved? Is there judicial discretion involved with taking away firearms from law-abiding gun owner? So that, again, there's, you know, the merits sound good, but then when you get into the actual execution of the legislation, and that's where things kind of go haywire.
Well, right now, Brian Kolb, out in Colorado, we have a woman who has been vigorous in her, I want to say, obsession. Some people say infatuation. As we speak. It may turn out to be nothing by the time people hear this, but 18 years old goes in and buys a shotgun. Why shouldn't that be red flagged?
Well, first of all, you know, I don't know where she got the shot. You know, and I'm not trying to be flip here. I'm just trying to say to you, okay, where'd she get the gun? How'd she get the gun?
Okay, she walked in, she paid, put good money down, and the guy gave her a gun, and we know where her position is.
Well, I don't know what state. Did they have background?
Colorado.
I know you. Yeah, because I know you can't do that in New York.
Well, why should
we had a judge? We had a judge in Rochester, New York, a sitting judge, try to go into a sporting goods store to buy a shotgun, and she was refused the purchase of that gun. So, in New York State, we have the most stringent gun laws. We've got background checks that have to be done. There are so many steps that you have to go through, which is fine. I have no problem with any of that. But, you know, when you talk about a case that's out in Colorado and what were the real circumstances, which we don't know, and also if this woman has been deemed dangerous or she's making threatening statements, they absolutely should go track her down, which is what I think they're trying to do at the current time. So, you can't apply.
So that's a red flag. That's a red flag, right? I mean, somebody waved a red flag and say, OK, we got to go at least talk to her. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing.
Well, but see, to me, you know, there's not too much because you're a guy who worships human life as I do. And we really have to take every precaution we can at a time when somebody gets a hold of a gun and our children, our most valuable citizens, our most valuable people are shot down as in Sandy Hook.
Well, obviously, these are all tragedies. There's no doubt about it. And no one wants to see anyone get hurt. Innocent children, innocent bystanders. Whether you're an adult or a child, you know, a tragedy is a tragedy, regardless where the geographic location is. And nobody wants to see that, including legitimate law-abiding gun owners. And that's really the differentiation is, you know, law-abiding gun owners who are put through additional rigorous steps versus people, criminals on the street, the illegal gun trade. You know, this is where I believe our concentrated effort should be in law enforcement and in our legislative process is the cracking down about illegal guns, illegal drugs, those types of activities where these things get, where the wrong weapons get into the wrong hands. And that's something where I think we should be concentrating our effort rather than tightening the screws on law-abiding gun owners who obey the law every single day.
So it's not a question, Brian Kolb, of either or to me. It's, you're absolutely right. We should be sure that we're policing to make sure that people who shouldn't have guns don't have them illegally. But on the other hand, I don't see what's so bad if we have a mother or a father, as we have seen happen recently, say, hey, I think my kid is dangerous. I want to make a telephone call here. I want somebody to do something about this. Sounds right to me.
Well, as long as there's due process, a protection of assumption of innocence till proven guilty. And that's, you just can't be assumed to be guilty because, and people make false accusations all the time.
Absolutely.
So when you get into a marital situation, if people are going through a contested divorce, all of a sudden a spouse wants to get back at the other spouse. So there's false claims of child abuse, false claims of danger. He's got guns. He's going to shoot my family. And all of a sudden, which is no, and there's cases where there's absolutely zero merit, but they have the ability to do it because there's not enough written due process steps to protect the innocent, as well as making sure we go after a potential harmful situation.
So if you're right about good gun owners are on the side of the gods on this one, how come the NRA isn't coming out and supporting all this legislation?
Well, it's not that you shouldn't support the legislation. I'm just saying it's how the legislation is written, and it's the devil's in the details.
But that's always,
you know, it's just like, no, it's not always the case. It doesn't have to be that way. That's my point. Everybody says, oh, that's just the way it is. We can deal with it. We'll fix it later. No, do it right the first time. You shouldn't have to go back and revisit legislation. If you do it in the light of day, when you have public hearings, when you take input for those that are in favor of it and for people that are opposed to it. So they both have their equal say in terms of what is going to occur or not occur with a piece of legislation. That's where it falls apart, is that there's not adequate venting of proposed legislation that, you know, and this is fair on anyone that's on either side of the pro or con on a controversial piece of legislation. And that's why, so in the end, if you do craft something, all sides have been heard, and then hopefully you've crafted a piece of legislation that takes into consideration most, if not everybody's concerns or opposition, or even in favor of a certain piece of bill.
Okay, so Brian Kolb, now we come to the part of the show with only 7 minutes left in which we have the 30-second to 60-second rule. I'll name something. You tell me what you think, but it has to be within the one-minute limit, okay? Your pay raise and the pay raise of Governor Cuomo.
First of all, on the pay raise for Governor Cuomo, I'm opposed to it. Didn't vote for it. We shouldn't have done it the way they did it. In terms of the pay raise for the legislature, I voted against having a commission. I think the legislature should either increase its own pay or not increase its pay, but it's up to the legislature to do it, and that's why I was opposed to the commission doing it.
So do you think Governor Cuomo had some kind of secret deal secretly arrived at about his own pay?
Well, of course he did, you know, and that's why it was done in the dead of night at what, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And they did it deliberately that way, so the media didn't get a hold of it, so the public didn't get a hold of it. And this is what makes Albany bad, bad, bad when it comes to public policy, stuff like this.
Okay, so let's talk about something that is not in your county, but is New York City big time, and that's so-called congestion pricing. In other words, you come in, you drive in Manhattan, you're going to pay more. The people in Queens are ticked off. The people in Brooklyn are ticked off. The people in New Jersey are ticked off. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm just coming back from New York City as we speak, Alan, and I've been asking folks in New York City, what do they think about the congestion pricing? And basically says they think it's going to be an absolute unmitigated disaster. How are they going to enforcement? How are they going to enforce it? How are they going to put the cameras? How are they going to police it? Are the commuters going to really get punished? You know, it's people that live there and have yet to see it be put in place are not happy about it, even though, and they understand about, yeah, they want to reduce car traffic, but they're the same people who are also saying, but they didn't do a good enough job when they put Uber and Lyft into the city in terms of restricting the number of cars that operate. You know, there's so many different aspects to this, and they believe it's not going to be a very good outcome when it's all said and done.
Rent control is a big issue in New York. We know the real estate lobby gets real anxious about that every year. They try to make it easier and easier to throw people out of their apartments. And now there's a move on in both houses to bring rent control upstate. It's got to be popular with anybody renting, right?
Well, I would say then, please leave us alone in upstate. I don't want your New York City focus on whether it's housing or any other public policy for that matter. They're trying to provide a solution to a problem that doesn't exist, especially in upstate. And this is a New York City issue, always has been a New York City issue. You know, I've heard from Democrat legislators in the assembly that are saying we're not interested in having a New York City type regulations in upstate. It's hard enough to survive as it is. And so I'm absolutely opposed to any expansion of regulations by New York State government going forward.
Now, Senator Parker has been known for throwing tantrums. Once again, he's thrown some tantrums, took his bow tie off, threw it on the floor. Is there a way to control this kind of behavior, or should there be a way?
Human behavior, if we can come up with controlling all human behavior, I think we'd be in a lot of trouble, you know. And I mean, honestly, people are people. And it doesn't matter whether you're a senator or an assemblyman or Joe or Jane, citizen on the street. Humans have been around here for thousands of years and hopefully continue for a couple thousand more. And it's just, you know, you can't regulate people.
So, but wait, shouldn't he be at least, if he engages in despicable behavior, shouldn't he be at least be censured?
Well, that's entirely up to the Senate. I have no idea what really happened. I mean, throwing a tie down,
And yelling at people?
You threw a tie down. So what?
Okay, all right. Do you see marijuana legalization? You got a minute on this one happening in this go-round in the legislature?
Well, I think that there's votes that want recreational marijuana to become real. The problem they're struggling with right now is law enforcement is pushing back significantly against it. The district attorneys across the state are against it. The medical community has come out against it.
How about
and I
you?
Think that's where I'm at. Yeah. I'm not there either way yet till I see what the legislation could be. I don't know yet.
So we've been talking to Brian Kolb, minority leader, very important position in the New York State Assembly. And we are delighted, Brian, that you've been with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Alan. Thank you very much.